Saturday, July 10th edition of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Natural Resources Subcommittee. Today we have work session scheduled for three bills, House Bill 3456, House Bill 2431, and Senate Bill 1028, and a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 1523. For those that have wondered about House Bill 2100, I think we are using the one-hour notice rule to bring that bill of the Court of Committee sometime later this morning, possibly before noon. What we'll do is go into a work session on House Bill 3456, and what I'd like to do is open the work session and turn it over to our legislative fiscal officer, Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, member of the committee. House Bill 3456 establishes a procedure for expedited independent cleanup of contaminated properties and securing DEQ approval. You have before you an A5 amendment and an A6 amendment. The A5 amendment softens the language from the A and growth version of the bill somewhat. Instead of an appeals board, it's changed to an advisory panel that gives a non-binding opinion to the DEQ director. And it softens some of the other language. DEQ is, Association of Oregon Industries is here to address the A5 amendment. We also have the A6 amendment, which is proposed by DEQ. And that amendment establishes an independent review process, a mediation or fact-finding process to resolve the differences between interested parties and the Department of Environmental Quality.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Olson to start with? Since we're in a work session, we're going to ask just for invited testimony, and I'd like to bring up, first of all, Mr. Langdon Marsh from the agency. Briefly, Mr. Marsh, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Sure. Thank you for attending the Saturday session. We have before us House Bill 3456, and I'd like to have your overview of 3456, and I see that there is an amendment that you are bringing to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The 3456, as the staff has indicated, is an effort to emphasize and make some modifications to, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, my name is Langdon Marsh, for the record, I'm the Director of the Department of Environmental Quality.
Thank you, Mr. Marsh.
to make some changes to a facet of our cleanup program, which is the independent cleanup program. Independent cleanups are allowed under Oregon law. What they are basically are cleanups conducted by parties who have a contaminated site and who don't wish to enter into an agreement with DEQ to oversee the cleanup, but who nevertheless want to pursue cleanup, and they're what they often do is, toward the middle or end of the cleanup process, come to DEQ to get a, what we call a no further action letter, which is a letter saying that the work that they have done to date is sufficient to qualify for cleanup under Oregon law, and that therefore the state will take no further action with respect to that site. When people come to us for that letter, we ask them for certain information about the type and amount of cleanup that they have done, the kinds of investigations that have been done to determine the extent of the problem, whether they have followed the rigors of the cleanup laws sufficiently. And if we agree with that, then we issue the no further action letter. The property owners can then take that letter to the bank and get loans on improvements to the property. It's part of the overall effort to restore contaminated property to the economy. I think the issue that's addressed by 3456 is basically that the proponents of the bill feel that there hasn't been quick enough response, that there have been disagreements about technical issues, that the agency has attempted to impose too rigorous a cleanup retroactively on the parties, and this would their bill would provide for some changes in the cleanup law and an advisory panel appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate to look at technical issues and make an advisory recommendation to the director. We have consistently disagreed with the necessity for that approach. We believe that the independent cleanup pathway that we have designed this year and put out for public comment is a good first step in changing how we do independent cleanups, that it does address many of the issues that have been brought to our attention during the interim about the delay and cost of getting DEQ approval of an no further action letter. What our proposal does is simply to validate what we are doing already, which is making a more organized effort to address independent cleanups. We have put in place timelines for DEQ action. We have provided for, and this bill recognizes, a mediation opportunity for a review by either mediation by somebody to get the owners and DEQ together, or even a fact-finding opportunity to, if there is a true disagreement among the parties. We think that the prudent thing to do is to experiment with this approach further, see how it works. If there are significant problems, they can certainly be addressed by the legislature later. Our two major issues with the House Bill 3456 are, one, that some of the language changes apparent intent of the bill may be construed by a court in the future to change the basic understanding and compromise that was reached with the 1995 legislation, House Bill 3352, which provided for a much simpler, cheaper, faster, better process for cleanups, but reserved the notion of that hotspots, areas of intense concentration of contaminants, needed to have a preference for treatment. And that remains in Oregon law. We think it should remain in Oregon law. And our Attorney General is concerned that the language of 3456 could be construed to by a court to change that basic compromise. The second concern we have is about the advisory panel. Not sure that an advisory panel of the type that's proposed here really addresses the issues that have been brought to our attention. We think that the streamlining and certainty of dates and opportunity for mediation or fact-finding contained in our pathway to address those issues. This advisory panel, while it is advisory, is a fairly fundamental departure from the way that administrative agencies do their work. Generally, we do our work, and then at the end, there is some kind of judicial or quasi-judicial review, either by court or by the Environmental Quality Commission in a contested case hearing. Neither in permits nor in other proceedings is there an opportunity for interlocutory or intermediate relief of the type that's established here. So we think it would be better to experiment with mediation and fact-finding approaches rather than something that has such a basic departure from the way administrative agencies are currently do their work. That's all I have to say, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer questions.
I'm thinking, Mr. The bill as presented obviously had some issues that were not resolved for the department, and you have prepared the Dash A Fifth Amendments to make resolution of the concerns that you have with the basic bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we don't believe the bill is necessary. However, I have consistently said that we're willing to take legislative direction in order to assure people that we are committed to make improvements in how independent cleanup process works. We think that our bill validates what we're doing already, but adds legislative emphasis to the need to have mediation or other kinds of independent review efforts. We think we can find independent reviewers. That's been done in the private sector constantly by reference to arbitration lists or other lists of experts that the parties can agree to. So we think that we can find the type of people who would do that kind of review. And then, you know, we would be more than happy to come back and report to the legislature either during the interim or before the next session on how the experiment has proceeded.
Questions for Mr. Marsh, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I'm looking at the House Amendments here and I see the criteria and the qualifications set up for these folks, qualified risk assessment, health and human services, 7 years, geologist, 7 years experience, professional engineer, attorney, experience in this, 7 years again, and this would be a very highly qualified group of people. And the issue for me is as you sit by and you watch for years, I still can't do that. You come to the conclusion that the agency is just not moving. So what you need is some folks maybe from outside who have the expertise to say, you know, you can expedite this. California has been a great example of someone who was into the same bogged down process. He now has changed and has taken a more proactive approach to reducing, you know, the pollution that exists. And we're going to, you know, to wait for another 2 years while we have polluted sites continuing whatever contamination they may do. Also, the very fact that property is highly devalued and all kinds of effects on not only the environment but the prosperity of the community. I sure think this would be worth rolling out.
Other comments for Mr. Morgan?
See, I sat on the Health, Water, and Environment Committee that was the committee that heard this bill, and the hearing was very interesting through the course of the bill. There, what came out in the testimony was that there was a pronounced reticence on the part of DEQ to be involved in negotiating on the wording in the bill. Or even, I think that it was you that actually testified, Mr. Marsh, that there was a problem. We attempted to gather data from DEQ about how long the people had been in the program and when they got out of the program, but none of that data was forthcoming to the committee at all. The Associated Oregon Industries brought in people that testified that there indeed was a problem with the length of time that they were involved in the program and the effectiveness of the adjudication process in the program. And my recollection of this was clearly being very frustrated by the department's inability to grapple with it. And so I must admit that when I see a set of amendments coming from the department, I'm kind of wondering exactly what's in here. Can you detail a little bit to the committee more substantially what the appeals process is or the adjudication process within your amendments?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I'm not sure that this got fully distributed, but we did submit to Representative Welsh in early June the figures that we had about the number of cleanups that were completed each year that were increasing, the fact that there were fewer hours spent by people in the program with the EQ staff, which was at least one indication that we were improving the ability to get people through the process, and that the average months of the completion of projects that came in the door has significantly decreased over the last 5 years. Unfortunately, because timetables are, despite those statistics, are really largely in the hands of the owner or of the property, because it's their business opportunities and their access to financial capital that largely dictate the pace at which many of these go through. Admittedly, I think that there have been in the past delays at the EQ in addressing some of the issues, and I think that's what our effort over the last few years has attempted to address, and also the commitment we've made in the independent pathway that we've developed is to specify actual time frames for things to happen. So I believe we are addressing delays. Your second question had to do with the what our bill provides with respect to an appeals process. We don't, there currently isn't, strictly speaking, an appeals process for independent cleanups or any cleanups for that matter, other than by going to court at the end of the process. And that's true in the, under federal law for the federal cleanups, as well as I think most, if not all, of the states. What we have proposed, however, is to try to address the issue that comes up often, that a contractor for an owner or the owner themselves believes that there is sufficient information or that there is sufficient risk assessment that is available to justify our issuance of a cleanup letter, no further action letter. And we say, no, we need more information, or we want more samples, or we think the risk assessment needs to be further amplified to look at such and such a scenario or whatever. Those kinds of technical issues are the things that lead to people's perception or sometimes to the reality of a delay in the process. So what we're proposing here is that that if a person has an issue with respect to our denial of a request to issue no further action letter because of the lack of information or because of a technical dispute, that an independent review could be conducted at the request of the party, that the independent reviewer would look at the decision of the department, look at the technical issues, and make a recommendation to the director. We think the advantage of that, and I think it's recognized by a number of parties who are involved in this process, is that it puts the department staff as well as the consultant staff to the test of whether they can really justify their position to an expert. And just the process of having to justify your position will often lead to a modification of that position, as you can see, the reasonableness of the other person's position or whatever. So we think it would lead to agreement fairly in very many cases and avoid having to go through any further elaborate process.
Mr. Chairman, I have a follow-up.
Follow-up question, Morgan.
So the mediator or negotiator, whatever you want to call this, this is one person?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I think that should be left up to experience. There are a number of ways that in the private sector where parties, for example, to a commercial dispute on a technical issue, the construction contract, for example, may choose to find an arbitrator or independent fact finder or mediator. They can simply agree on somebody. They can use lists submitted to each other and try to find a common person. They can refer to the American Arbitration Association or other organizations like that for people. Or they could agree each to appoint a person and have each of those persons appoint a third person. you have a three-party reviewer. So we're not dictating under the bill which of those would work out.
Who appoints these people?
Well, the department would go through the contracting process with the person because the person has to be paid. But the bill provides that the person must be acceptable to both all parties. So we would not appoint somebody or contract with somebody who is not acceptable to everybody.
May I have another one?
Yes, ma'am.
A hearing, I would assume, takes place. What happens with the decision of the board or this person?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, the reviewer would provide to the director an advisory recommendation on the whether or not the no further action letter should be issued or whatever, or make whatever other recommendations to achieve a result that person might want to make. And then the director would decide whether or not to issue the no further action letter. And that's, I would say, consistent with the both informal and formal practice in many areas where it is the department's decision, but is often delegated to individuals within the department. I don't sign permits, for example. But if somebody has an issue with a permit, that could be elevated to me, and in some cases we have elevated it to the Environmental Quality Commission. This formalizes that so that I would take this as being, in effect, a non-delegable or virtually non-delegable duty for me to make the decision, which allows for a review other than by the staff people involved.
Are there
time frames attached
to the
process? Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, in our program, we are providing time frames for agency responses to requests by the parties. This bill does not include time frames for the independent review because, by the nature of it, it's like any kind of commercial dispute. It may take several iterations or meetings with the independent reviewer. It may take some kind of public process. Whatever it takes, we don't provide time frames in the bill, but in the nature of those things, it's hard to do that.
Thank you.
Further questions from Mr. Marsh? Senator Metz?
Yes. Mr. Marsh, on the -86 amendments. On Section 4, on the independent review, it says the applicant or any other affected person may request an independent review. Who's an affected person?
An affected person might be an adjacent property owner who felt that the action of the proposed action of the department would adversely affect their situation. It could be a member of the community.
Have you reviewed the A5s that have been proposed?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, yes, we have.
I know there was a concern the department had in terms of noticeably so, too, and decreasing standards for environmental standards that seem to have been addressed in the A5s. I would be curious as to your consolidated reaction to the A5 amendments and whether if they do not meet your concerns as opposed to your proposed A6s, what that concern would be.
Senator Metzger, let's let Mr. Ledger and company present their A5, but I'd like to have the rest of the committee answer any questions that they have of A6s before we move to those other amendments.
I'd like to have his opinion.
We'll bring him back for a reaction after he's heard them side by side, but I wonder about the fairness of having somebody critique an amendment before we've had it presented. We'll do it in that order, if you don't mind. Other questions? Mr. Sanson?
I didn't see any sunset or report back to the legislature in either of the versions. And it seems like, you know, seeing if we do have this advisory panel there, it seems like it'd be worthwhile to see how this experiment works.
That's something that we can consider in context of both amendments. The issue is one that I think many of us have heard from constituents about, and there is a question about timeliness and creating a system that works better, faster, and more conveniently. And I guess I have heard from constituents who've got hotspot issues, and I think their problem has been that once they get enmeshed in the regulatory framework, it's very hard to get out of it. Even if they do have agreement on the cleanup and remediation, it seems to trigger all sorts of other little contrails within the agency. And I'm wondering if that's also an issue that we could discuss in the context of the bill and maybe the two amendments. But what I'd like to do is ask the members of the committee that in the packet you see a letter from Representative Lewis who expressed some of these concerns. What I'd like to do is bring up Mr. Ledger, who also has an amendment and it's possibly a different version of the bill, and we could hear that. Mr. Mercer is also here today to offer a perspective. Let's do that, have the presentation of the Dash 5 amendments, and then we'll proceed along Senator Metzger's line of questioning on Dash 5.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Mr. Ledger. Thanks for joining us on a Saturday morning. And I know this is cutting into lots of folks' golf games, but we're glad you're here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Pitt's losing an opportunity for a nine somewhere. I know it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm John Ledger with Associated Oregon Industries, and we have brought to you this bill and also the amendment to Dash 5 sponsored by Representative Lewis. As Director Marsh said, this deals with independent cleanups, which are cleanups that you can do and not have to report to the department. Cleanups you can do on your own. And what is happening, what we have found happening, is that companies, people are discovering something that's been on the soil for a long time, maybe 40 years, might be creosote, who knows what. And they're going to their attorneys or their consultants, and they're saying, you know, we'd like to contact the DEQ. We're going to clean it up, but we'd like to contact the DEQ and get a sign-off, a final sign-off to tell us if we did it properly. And they are, in fact, being advised by consultants and the attorneys, who, in fact, stand to make a ton of money off of this if they do, not to approach the DEQ, but to clean it up and not, it's not worth going to get a no further action letter. And the reason is because there is, I think, in reality, and it's perception anyway, that once you start to wade into the swamp of cleanup regulations, you cannot get out, and it goes on forever. The standards are fine. The cleanup standards are fine. The problem is you get into the process and you can't get resolution of things. And these questions are highly technical. They are all stuff about, you know, if you ever sat in a room with these people, it's stuff about how you calculate acceptable levels of risk of this blowing off of that or this there, and it goes, the discussions go on forever, and while they're going on, you're being billed for all the DEQ time they spend discussing your case, even in their own office, for you to get together and discuss the case, then you get a bill for that. So it gets very expensive, so people, in fact, are not coming to the DEQ to find out if they're cleaned up or not. That's bad for everybody. It's bad for the environment. It's bad for the companies. In some cases, they feel they have to get a no further action letter because they may want to sell the property, or they might just want to find out was it done properly. They want to check. So what we need is something that is very clear that will make people feel comfortable coming to the department, and this whole bill is about getting a yes or a no. That's what the whole bill is about, is am I okay? Now, one of the things that we did in the amendments is, and you have a blue sheet that I passed out, this comes up about initially when the bill came out, we were hearing things like, well, if the bill passes, the entire, you know, North American continent is going to go superfund, and that kind of dropped off that kind of talk. You should have a blue sheet. I have some extras. And if you look right at the bottom of the first page, you'll see a box. And this is text out of the bill, out of our bill. I mean, it's in the bill. And sex says sections 2 to 6 of this act, and that's the thrust of the act, are intended to establish an additional alternative for accomplishing removal and remedial actions that are protective of public health and the environment and for review by the department of those actions. Nothing in sections 2 to 6 of this act, and this is in the law, this is not intent, this is in the law, is intended to require changes to existing cleanup programs administered by the department. It does not change the voluntary cleanup program, does not change their ability to do orders. Nothing in sections 2 to 6 of this act shall be interpreted or construed to change or weaken the acceptable risk level set forth, and it cites the code, or repeal or amend any provision of that cleanup code. And 3, nothing in these sections shall be interpreted or construed to weaken or reduce the authority of the department to conduct or order a liable person to conduct removal or remedial action under Idaho code of any type of any law.
Oregon.
Excuse me. I still think I'm in Idaho.
And Mr. Marsh, I think the committee might be interested to know what your function in Idaho was. I beg your pardon. Well, the ledger in Idaho, your function was?
My function, I directed air programs for about 5 years. I directed cleanup programs for about 2 years, and I was deputy director for about 3 years.
Of the Idaho?
DEC.
Proceed, please.
So what we wanted to do was to construct a bill that said, here's how you go about getting a sign-off if you do your own cleanup. The independent cleanup program does not exist in Oregon code. There's nothing in Oregon code that addresses it. What you do today will be the first legislative guidance for this program, direction for this program. What this bill does is say, the department will establish the independent cleanup program. They'll do their rules. Has to be protective, has to meet the standards, and it must stress, when they review what you do, the results, not the process. Because remember, these are cleanups that you can take to the DEQ after you've done them and say, did I do okay? So the process is not the critical part here. What counts is, am I okay now? I've done the cleanup, I didn't have to tell you about it, but I choose to, and I want to know if I did it right. Now, the process of your analysis, I don't think is too critical there. What we want to know is it cleaned up now or not? Sampling data, all that. That's all fair game. So the bill says, department, you go in that direction. Now, if somebody comes and asks the department, okay, I think I've cleaned up the standards, and the department says, well, we don't think you have. You're going to need more information, which is going to be the normal thing that happens. You have to go back and you get more information. That's a normal event. However, in some cases, if the person feels like what's being asked is not reasonable or the interpretations of the rules are not reasonable and you get into a rhubarb, you know, that's going to drag out for years, we need some way so people know that there's a way out or at least to get something resolved through an advisory opinion. What this bill does is establish essentially a standing committee that would be on call. But it would be there. So you wouldn't have to wait for lists to go out, go down through lists, decide who would be good, who would be bad. It's there. It's ready. We try to make the committee as least threatening to the department as possible. The committee is appointed by the governor in consultation with the DEQ director, and they're confirmed by the Senate. They have to be experts, because we're dealing with something that is mind-boggling technical. These are going to be all people with pocket protectors. They have at least 7 years' experience, and they're engineer, hydrogeologists, people who know the nuts and bolts. Under this bill, if you cannot reach agreement with the department, you can call up and ask for the advisory body to be put together. Originally, it was fairly formalistic. They would meet, and there were all these things going back and forth. We got a lot of comments that it was too convoluted, too cumbersome, so we made it very simple in the amendments. The committee meets, and they hear both sides. And then they have to also provide an opportunity for public discussion. That's in here. They have to develop procedures for that. And they render an advisory opinion. Originally in the bill, there wasn't an advisory opinion. They had authority to overturn the department's decision. that the department found quite offensive. So we softened it and we said it's an advisory opinion and it goes to the DEQ director. Goes to the director. Having a panel of experts, we think, on this is much better than having a single person who cannot possibly have all the knowledge you need to review the technical things that are involved here. So the opinion goes to the director. The director has some options, just like in the amendments brought in by the DEQ. He can adopt the opinion. He can ignore it. But unlike the Dash 6 amendments, the director under the Dash 5 is required to tell the applicant exactly why he agreed or disagreed with the advisory body in detail. So the person that applies and goes through this process is going to get a letter within 30 days after the opinion is rendered from the director saying, this is what I did, and specifically this is why I agree, and specifically this is why I don't agree. So at least you'll know. Cost. Under our bill, the DEQ would propose to the Environmental Quality Commission a schedule of fees. So whoever appeals pays for it. But they will know how much it costs because there will be a schedule of fees adopted. Under the Dash 6s, it simply says that the party will agree to pay the costs incurred for the independent review. There's no cap. It doesn't say it has to be done by rule. So if you were an applicant and you were going to ask for a review, you'd probably be told, we don't know how much it's going to cost, we'll bill you. And then they would bill all the DEQ time to you that you spend asking for the appeal. It's open-ended. As far as in the Dash 6s, it being done by a panel or a group, that's specifically not allowed. In the Dash 6s on page 2, line 13, says the independent reviewer shall be a person acceptable to both parties. It doesn't say a panel, it says a person. And we think what would happen if you had this process where you have to have a person that's acceptable to both sides, we're going to exchange lists, we're going to do this, it's going to go back and forth, you'll have months go by before you can find the person to review it. And also it allows one party to essentially veto the process. Lastly, as far as mediation and negotiation goes, we think that's a great idea, and we want to encourage it. And in the Dash 6s, there's a clause that specifically says all timelines, all deadlines involved in the appeals process can be extended, put on delay indefinitely by common consent of both parties for negotiation purposes. So anywhere along the pathway, any timeline, as long as both parties say, we want a timeout to negotiate, we want an extension, you can have it. As many as you want for as long as you want. That will conclude my remarks, I think, on the Dash 5s. We think they'll work. We think it will bring more people in the cleanup program. We'll get a better environmental result.
There's another feature that I've noticed on the blue sheet that I did not see addressed in the Dash 6s. And if you could just address how the Dash 5s bring public participation into the process.
In the Dash 5, one of the functions of the review board is to develop actual procedures on how they would involve public opinion. So they're specifically charged with the task in the Dash 5s of developing procedures so you would get the public input into the process. Now, I don't think it was the intent, it certainly isn't in the Dash 5, to have this review process open to just anybody who would ask for a review process. Because you'd have people cleaning up and coming to the department, and anybody could appeal. We want people to be able to comment on it, but we don't want necessarily anybody to appeal. I mean, that just makes no sense under this process. The person should be appealing is the person who's affected by the agency action. And lastly, I think it's frankly bizarre that you could have government action that costs people hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe millions, and absolutely no appeal process. None. I think that's That's a travesty, and what we've offered is something that is non-binding, non-threatening, but at least it's a start.
Question each on the panel. Senator George?
Probably you have the answer to Idaho, but for example, I mentioned California, and to give you a little bit of background on this, probably 10 years ago, this piece of property that belonged to my cousins that they inherited from their parents, who probably thought they were doing them a favor, who created a nightmare, by the way, of leaving this property. It had been a bulk plant location. It had also been a major service station and truck fueling facility. Anyway, to make a long story short, they were literally told by their attorney, the best thing for you to do, because both of them were teachers, had a good retirement, get a divorce right now. The attorney said, whatever you do, don't enter into this process until all this is done. And just sitting there saying, wow, this is amazing. They were told that it could be $600,000 or $700,000 to clean the site. And so the thing just stayed on hold. Now, you think about that. It's a high water table area. And if, in fact, there was leakage and contamination, this may migrate. That's not the thing you want to do. Something happened in California. And then what happened following that, whatever change that was, and I don't have the answer to that, and that's my question, is then that site was cleaned up. All of the area where the bulk facility was cleaned up, tanks were removed, everything else. Now that's a tire shop. And I believe a clothing store and one of the other sections is back into productive tax-generating operation. Do you know, could you tell us about Idaho, or if you know anything about what happened in California?
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, I'm not sure what happened in California. It might have been what is called a brownfield action, and that is where you get a special process if you're going to develop the land into something that has an economic benefit. And ironically, Oregon has a brownfields process that works pretty well. And it makes a real difference if you go to the DEQ and you go through the usual cleanup, or if you go to the DEQ and go through the brownfields. If you go through the brownfields, same standards, things actually move along pretty well. If you go in through the regular cleanup, then you bog down. So a lot of it is just how people, you know, are going to make people go through the hoops. And when there's enough incentive, people will go through the hoops.
I guess the point and what I'd like to address is that there must be some process that enables first of all cleanup to occur, and secondly for not to be so detrimental that it destroys the people who have to own that piece of property. And that's what I think we need to analyze, and this looks to me like it gets us that way. There seems to be moving the process to actually having a cleanup occur and then the property being able to be returned to some profitable result.
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, I think you're right. What we would like ideally, and this is not going to happen, that's probably my lifetime, but what we'd like ideally would be somebody discovered contamination on their property. They're not a criminal. This was done a long time ago. They should pick up the phone and call the DEQ. I mean, we should be at that point, and we're not.
Senator Sherman, I have a question. Thanks, Senator. Mr. Jerome, based on the discussion, could you get on the guy's thinking about the way to go. Here's the worst in Cancun. On the confession can find 15 and 5. I'm just wondering, since there's no state definition of the word substantially, why do we have it in here?
This is on the dash 6s?
Yes. Dash 5. Okay, my reason. Okay. 5, line 15.
That actually is a term, I guess it's a term of art in the legal profession. And what we try to do is establish something, and this is a bit fuzzy, something so if somebody had went in, there could be some way to recover costs. And that is admittedly a little bit fuzzy, and it was the best we could come up with, because you really can't quantify.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chair, you raise the motion.
Background there, but I'd like to give Senator Mesher an opportunity to ask questions if he has any further.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I asked Director Marsh, I'd like to get kind of a handle on the differences between the A5 and the A6s. So I guess I'll, now that you've made your presentation, your evaluation, I hope you have, John, had a chance to read the A6s as to your encapsulated opinion of those in meeting the objectives that you were after.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzger, I think the A6s would put us in worse shape than we are now. I think in many cases they result in sort of imposing the what's now the voluntary cleanup program on the independent cleanup program. because remember, these are cleanups that are already done. You take to the DEQ. And I think especially troublesome is the review process with a single mediator, a long process on choice, open-ended costs, no requirement for the director to have any specificity on his findings are very troublesome.
Pretty carefully, thank you.
We are in work session, and I'm sensing some consensus forming on the committee. If we wanted to move the bill, we could probably do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Messerly moves the A5 amendment to the bill 3456.
Hey, I have a surrogate motion on behalf of Representative Messerly. Do you agree with your mouthpiece over here, Mr. Chair?
Pretty close.
Let's initially move the dash A5 amendments into Proposal 3456. Question on the motion, Representative?
We had asked the director to give his opinion of also the A5 amendments. We were waiting for Mr. Ledger to do that, and I would like Mr. Marsh to
give
his calculated evaluation.
And Mr. Marsha, or I guess Mr. Ledger, don't go far. You may have other questions.
Mr. Marsh, Chair for the record, I'm Lang Marsh, City Director. Senator Metzger, I'll be very brief. There are two problems that still remain for us, two fundamental problems with the Dash 5 amendments. One is that our basic concern is for all of this is the protection of people, fish, water, other resources. And the language of the opening section, I think it's section 2, still contains language that is of concern to our Attorney General that could be interpreted to change the basic compromise that was in the 1995 legislation. And particularly with respect to hot spots of contamination, be interpreted to put them in some jeopardy, put that preference for treatment in some jeopardy. And I think that that's probably the one of the fundamental problems. The second is that the the process that is embodied in this bill with Senate confirmation of a independent technical review panel, we view as unnecessary, that the issues, technical issues, at this stage of a regulatory process, the intermediate stage or interlocutory stage, ought to be handled by the agency that's been set up with the expertise to handle those issues. There are certainly issues of timeliness, of how to get to yes, which is something we all want to do, how to provide the appropriate level of cleanup. We think those can and ought to be handled administratively, experiment with approaches like fact-finding and mediation, and we don't need this rather substantial change in the way we do business.
Mr. Marsh, I guess I'm going to direct the attorney or direct the committee's attention to page 5, section 6, which I think on line 19 begins to deal with the issue of.
If you look at the bill,
I'm looking at the bill.
Okay.
And on page 5, section 6, line 19, what you're really looking at there is a series of notwithstandings, and nothing in the section, again, point 1, point 2, nothing in section 2 shall, and then there's listed a series of exemptions or clarifications that would not overturn the existing authority the agency has. The other thing I think is that I understand that the agency may have some problem with an advisory panel that's outside the agency, but there's some cross-cultural pollination that sometimes happen when outside folks come in and help clarify or expedite or even obscure interactions on on issues, and I think that that's not always a bad thing. Sometimes it's a great thing. Organizations tend to develop corporate cultures, and once in a while opening the windows and letting a little fresh air in isn't a bad thing. Senator Messer, do you have further questions?
I did want to have one other question, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marsh, I'm just a little concerned or interested anyway in the references to the dry cleaner program. I mean, that's all part of this bill, and this language is just put in there. Does this have any effect on that current program of the dry cleaner industry, a cleanup program? Does that change that in any way?
Chair, Senator Metzger, no. The language on dry cleaners is the same language in the current statute under the conventions of legislative drafting.
Yeah.
It incorporates the entire section that's being amended. So
I understand. But the review language is also mentioned in there. I just wonder if that provides a different setup than what is currently under the current program, a different method for doing that.
Mr. Chair, there's no change intended, I don't believe. Okay. There is any change.
Thank you.
I'm not sure. I think the issue on those dry cleaners, the reason I came here is that there used to be one on every corner in the country, and they just generally drove a pipe into the ground and dumped perk right into the groundwater.
We had we covered that extensively in our Business and Consumer Affairs Committee, as you have had that out of the Senate. We had a very mysterious death in that house.
Maybe those things can be resurrected. Senator, we have a motion on the floor. Representative Mitchell made a motion through his surrogate to move the Dash 85 amendments. Are there any questions on the motion? And any objections to the motion? Hearing none, seeing none, so ordered, the Dash 85 amendments are moved into House Bill 3456. We need a motion to move House Bill 3456 to the floor, or excuse me, to the full ways and means of the DCAP recommendation. Representative Warren.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Moves House Bill 3456 to the full ways and means of the DCAP recommendation. One question the Chair has before we do that. There is a fiscal impact on this bill we should touch on before we move the bill to the full ways and means. I'm going to ask Mr. Olson just for a brief touch on the fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. You have in front of you the A5 fiscal impact statement, totaling $959,000. And it's broken out there by fees and a cost recovery, the cost recovery for the cleanups that take place and the cost are charged back to those parties. DEQ feels that this bill may increase the number of cleanups. However, we're not sure how many, and if in fact that does happen. So we would recommend that the $563,596 in federal fund cost recovery be withheld and instruct the department to come back to the emergency board once they know the true impact of how many cleanups this may include.
And Mr. Olson, the way I read this is that the Department of Environmental Quality would establish a process to recover all of the costs involved in these cleanups. And there may be an additional effect of $7,200, which would be also a financial or a fiscal impact in this process.
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
And by directing the agency to the legislative e-board, we're actually giving them access to additional funding through the e-board to defray the cost of this cleanup.
That's correct.
And the program. So that will be reported by the agency as $563,000 worth of cuts that we've made to the budget. Questions, Representative Jensen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This process got a little ahead of me. I probably should have been talking about this at the time of moving the A5s. But I'm looking at the general fund effect on those revenues and seeing roughly 90,000 textbooks over the biennium. That's $450,000 plus.
I do understand that. I guess the OF designation of other funds is the thing that I'm looking at.
I Yeah, I was looking at the general fund on that, on this.
Could I see the document that you're referring to, Secretary Johnson? That $322,000 in the first biennium and $130,000.
Right.
Okay. That, and so the A5 does have a general fund implication.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rick, for pointing that out. It does have an implication. The general fund.
Right. And I, as we are involved in our process here and look out over all of the budget issues, I just think we need to be very aware of what we've done with general funds, and we, and it has nothing to do one way or another with the merits of the funds.
We need to be cognizant of every dollar that we're spending. Any questions on the motion? Representative Westbrook.
Mr. Chair, I think it would be appropriate if Representative Morgan removed her motion so we could amend the bill to include the line item appropriation, which is not in my review, quick review of the A5s included in the A5.
That is the case. It is not in the amendment.
Representative Morgan amends her motion to include a conceptual that would include the general fund appropriation for biennium 1999 to 2001. Any questions on that motion? Hearing none, any objections to the motion? Seeing none, we will go ahead and order them that the dash A5 is conceptually amended in House Bill 3456 will go to the full Ways and Means of the DPAC recommendation. Ordered. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3456. I'm going to open the work session on Senate Bill 1028. And for the purpose of establishing the record of opening the work session on 1028, so that we may continue it when we have our fiscal impacts developed, and they are in the process of being developed even as we speak. So we are opening an in-work session on Senate Bill 1028 at the record show. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 1028, and we will probably be continuing that work session later today or perhaps tomorrow when those are available. Senator Karen has
already tomorrow.
Actually, reopen the work session and recess the work session. Thank you. That was a technical correction to that motion. In order, so order. We're going to recess on Senate Bill 1028 work session. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator,
with your permission, and when we open 2431, could I speak to 1028 in relationship to 2431?
Absolutely, sir.
Okay.
We are in. We're not going to do that yet.
No.
And we don't have 2100 yet. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2431 relating to the community's right to know. However, you should have a packet in front of you that details that issue, and I will ask our regulated fiscal analyst, Carl Siebert, to address this bill, House Bill 2431.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2431 comes from the House Water and Environment Committee and the Senate Public Affairs Committee. The bill covers three major areas. Number one, it creates a community right-to-know technical committee that will be staffed by the State Fire Marshal's Office. This committee is to develop a plan for the creation on the Internet of a central accessing point for hazardous substance information. Included in this plan will be linking of all applicable agency databases and standardization of submitted data. And the committee will report its findings to the 71st Legislative Assembly. Secondly, the bill establishes requirements that new local community right-to-know programs must meet. However, programs established before the first of this year are exempt from these requirements until July 1 of 2003. And thirdly, the bill creates a governmental policy group which is to be staffed by the Department of Environmental Quality. This national level working group is charged with reporting on options for enhancing statewide toxic substance reporting and data collection. And the report, they are to report their findings also to the 71st Legislative Assembly.
We're going to ask the proponent, House Bill 2431, Senator George, did you want to address House Bill 2431? I'm comfortable any way you want to do it, Senator, but perhaps for the community benefit, you can have him up. Yeah.
All right. Mr. Ledger, would you join Senator George in addressing House Bill 2431?
Gentlemen, you've heard the overview of our legislative fiscal officer. I'll defer to Senator George to address the issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, State Senator Gary George, District 2. And what I'm going to talk about really quickly here, and then I'll take my seat back with you, is the what I believe will end up being one of the most significant environmental direction changes in the Oregon history. I honestly do believe that, because we have three bills that I believe fit together very well. The postponement of 1028 for the purpose of amendments actually then fits these three pieces back together. And what they are is under 2431, as you have described, section of 1028 had the fire marshal and the coordination of all this data. This is now in House Bill 2431. Also, yesterday, from the House floor was passed House Bill 3602, the pesticide reporting bill. That was a section of Senate Bill 1028. What has happened, and the reason 1028 has been delayed so long, was because we were aware that those pieces were moving forward and that they are actually, at the end, they fit together very well to become a really good plan for the improvement of the environment of the state of Oregon. So I'm here to urge the passage of 2431 and to look forward to the full package fitting together and providing what I believe is a new direction, is a good direction for environmental quality in Oregon.
It sounds like a field search more than a testimony.
It does somewhat. Before you leave your chair, though, we'll ask Mr. Ledger to address the bill, and then if there's any questions for you either, and if we're hearing them, then certainly resume your seat here.
So Ledger, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Ledger with AMI. I thought the summary of the staff was very good. This bill has been negotiated laboriously and occasionally acrimoniously with the governor's staff and members of both parties. We've had a great deal of help from Representative King on this. But what the bill does is not put out local community right to know programs, but it does set bookends for them. For things like how high their penalties can be, so they have to go through a public process to establish the chemical list, limits on fees, things like that. They're pretty reasonable bookends. It also will enhance the current state program, requires a fire marshal to be the lead in establishing kind of a common portal for all public right to know information, chemical information. So the community can just click on the fire marshal's website and get into the other websites. It'll look seamless to the community. There's a lot of information state government people can't get for one reason or another. No one's really just put it together. It also establishes a technical committee in the DEQ to look at the whole toxics issue and toxics reporting issue. We think it's a very good bill, and we certainly urge that it be funded and passed.
Questions from the committee? Representative King, while you were in conference in the hallway, your name was mentioned several times in connection with House Bill 2431, and the chair wishes to give you an opportunity to defend your reputation. Did you want to address House Bill 2431? Mr. Ledger and Senator George were both very complimentary of your efforts to bring this bill to the committee. This is what the record note. This is the very first time Senator Representative King's been without words.
Not without words, and just slow. I felt that the Eugene law was a very extreme law and very difficult to ever amend or bring into a good functioning process, because it was a charter amendment, i.e. a constitutional amendment for the city of Eugene that versus an ordinance. And also I think that law had a substantial impact on Oregon's international reputation, for being business-friendly, and particularly in the high-tech industry. So I did feel like there was a state impact. At the same time, I felt that if we were ever going to have any modification of a local law, that we were going to need to have a good and efficient statewide toxic waste. You know, and I do think that there is public demand for that type of service out there. I was hopeful but not optimistic, that we would be able to have negotiations proceed along to a point where the governor, could agree, with the programs that was recommended, by AOI. I did help facilitate negotiations between the governor's office and AOI and the American Electronics Association, and then really let them work along. And I was very impressed with the work and the commitment was there. I do have a question for the DEQ.
Mr. Marsh, would you come forward, please? And gentlemen, you need not to leave your station.
Yeah, that'd be appreciated. Let's start preface. When the bill was originally looked at, we really didn't anticipate the size of the fiscal impact that we're looking at today. And
another one of those tax and spend bills.
Yeah. But I think it was very fair that if indeed we're going to have some modification of a local ordinance, we needed to make sure we had a good product to provide for the state. And one of the things that was there was that the DEQ costs of getting the program set up. And I did ask, well, gee, how much of that is hard dollars and how much of it is adjusted pay? And I think that the DEQ did a pretty good job of defending, their fiscal request in that. But one of the issues that came out of that that does impact cost is the Blue Ribbon National group of people to do the analysis of setting up the program, as versus what I had originally anticipated, and I think a number of people did, that we were going to have the certified smart people in DEQ do that process, or to do it regionally. And I think when we bring in a national consultant, there's more than just an airline ticket, that they're putting their reputation on the line, they needed to therefore do more research, et cetera, and that's an expensive item. So I just wanted to get a good handle on how many of those, or how necessary is it to have the national Blue Ribbon people do the evaluation coming into this, versus the people in your agency that I do have confidence in.
Representing that is far more defense than your reputation required. But if there's a question, then I'll let you
go.
One of the
questions. Well, defense,
Mr. Chair, Representative Martin Morris, two directors, Representative King, and I do also support your efforts to bring all of this together. The purpose of having a few people, it wouldn't necessarily be the majority of this task force, but a few people from the national level or from other jurisdictions that have had some experience with this, would be actually to help us short-circuit some of the research and activity that otherwise might have to be done to go out and study other programs. I would envision, for example, going to the Chemical Manufacturers Association Washington and asking for some recommendations to people, probably the Environmental Defense Fund or other environmental organizations on the other side. We can get a balanced view of what has worked, what hasn't worked in other parts of the country. I would still expect to rely heavily on Oregon and regional and DC folks
at this point, I'll ask the committee members if they have any questions for Senator George, and if not, after she's in the position on the panel. Thank you, Senator.
Representative has it for.
Well, just a quick follow-up. I think that on, you know, toxic technical issues, it's been really important to bring the DEQ into the process. And that, you know, this does that. And I think now they, you know, are, you know, a player at the table. At the same time, that since the fire marshal already does inspections statewide, it would really be a tremendous, I think, waste of, you know, fiscal resources if you're able to try and recreate it. An additional inspection program, and it just, I think, does a good job in pollinating information from the source of information to the expertise of the information.
Questions for the panel on the bill, and if not, we'll have the legislative fiscal do our recommendations and do the fiscal impacts. So we'll turn it back over to Mr. Siebert.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have in front of you the fiscal impact and the LFO recommendations. The fiscal impact reflects, I believe, Representative King's last comment, and that the positions identified. The positions identified are more of a coordinating position to work with DEQ and to ensure that the department funnels the correct data to both the work group and the technical committee. You'll see a breakdown for the technical committee staff on other funds expenditure and the general fund for the governmental policy group staff and the fire marshal's position of $108,019. The fire marshal position is for an information specialist type position, which will be dealing with all the technical problems of accessing all the databases within the state and creating the website. And DEQ's position, which is a 0.75 FTE, will be coordinating the data and the technical expertise other than the information technology kind of expertise. The technical committee staff for the Department of Environmental Quality and the State Fire Marshal's Office will be funded through funds from the Community Right to Know Fund, which is generated from fees that industry pays. We believe that the ending balance is sufficient in the fund, and the projected ending balance for this next biennium is sufficient in the fund to cover both of these positions with no increase in fees for 9901, and will still leave the fund an ending balance of $250,000, or about 10% of its operating expenses, which could be adequate to cover any unforeseen expenditures.
Representative Jensen, did you want to address the issue of the general fund?
Yes, I as the $149,000
yes.
For the record, what we're spending. I guess Mr. Chair, if I may. The last amendment, it sounds like it's almost as bad as 3225. Why?
The JAS 11s, I believe, are the enabling sections that would give us the limitation increase and takes that are necessary. I'll remind our colleagues we are in work session. Senator George?
Mr. Chairman, because there is such a parallel between 1028 and this bill, and because some of the things that are going to be now placed in here were in ours, I would like to comment and ask the question of Alfo about a few things. Number one, we have a letter from the Department of Environmental Quality dealing with environmental justice, and then they were talking about, this is the second page of the statement, said the department believes the next step is to increase the amount of data the Department of Public and Industry is regarding pollution sources. Then it says the department has started this process by conducting statewide hazardous air pollution inventory. This information needs to be developed for other types of pollution as well, indicating that they probably had this underway with dollars within their budget. And then in the fire marshal, what was presented to us, the statement was made that in order to accomplish the things that I believe are in this bill, that were in ours, it says no additional funding or staffing would be needed for the Office of Fire Marshal to implement the requirements.
There was any discussion about
It looks like you kind of put them back in there after you said that they...
Those are good questions, Senator. It sounds like it needs a reconciliation meeting, so... Paul, maybe you can help address
that. I think my one defensible be in this bill, though, rather than mine.
The amount you see is basically just the expenditure limitation that allows the fire marshal to get at the funds that they already have. So it would not be an increase in fees, we don't believe.
So we're not creating new money.
That was the same thing.
We're just authorizing.
And it was the same position, I believe, that was intentionally here.
And the Senator George, your efforts in this area to bring this to the forefront are very much appreciated. We probably wouldn't be hearing this bill if it had not been for your efforts on the Senate. Thank you. Any questions for the panel? We have before us the Dash B-11, and we also have the LFO recommendations.
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, LFO recommends that the State Fire Marshal requires a limited duration position authority of one FTE for Installation Specialist 5 and a other funds expenditure limitation increase of $108,019. This amount also covers the funds necessary for a reclass for the fire marshal of an administrative specialist 2 position to an office manager 3, since some of the duties will be expanded to carry out requirements of this bill. LFO requests the DAS unschedule this portion of the expenditure limitation pending completion of the position reclassification requirements. Also, the budget report will direct the fire marshal to transfer $139,455 in community right-to-know other funds revenue to the Department of Environmental Quality to fund the two limited duration positions associated with the technical committee. And there is in the B-11s a general fund appropriation of $149,017 for the Department of Environmental Quality to cover costs associated with the governmental policy group.
Okay, and that would be an appropriation that increases their limitation. That also will be reported as a cut to the agency budget. Any other questions? Any questions for legislative fiscal reports, recommendations? We do need a motion to accept LFO's recommendations, a motion to move the B-11 amendments. Representative recognized.
We'll make the motion to accept the LFO recommendations.
We have a motion on the floor to accept the LFO recommendations. Are there any questions on the motion? Seeing and hearing no questions, are there any objections to the motion? So ordered. We need a motion to move the B-11 into House Bill 2431. So moved. Any questions on the motion? Any discussion on the motion? Any objections to the motion? If not, so ordered. We need a motion to move House Bill 2431 as amended to the full Ways and Means of the Due Pass recommendation. Representative moves. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objections on the motion? Seeing none, so ordered. House Bill 2431 was moved to the Full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. After the Full Ways and Means presentation, Representative will carry on the House side. Senator George on the Senate side.
If you don't mind the discussion, I wouldn't mind you doing that because we're thinking about all these three of these coming out on the Senate board pretty close together.
I have no objection.
I guess he's concerned about whether we want to listen to him in 3 consecutive bills or not. Now, that's probably a real concern. Since the Senate President is trying to adjourn the session, that could be a problem.
Actually, if we wanted to do this in a reasonable way, Senator Messer, would you mind carrying the bill and for orders?
I knew I should have opened my
mouth.
I can't open a public hearing, but let the record show that the Democrats are carrying another fee increase.
You have no idea that, Mr.
Actually, not a question. I carry my shirt.
Show no fear.
So voted yes for every budget. Colleagues, we have received information on Senate Bill 1028, but we will probably not see the amendments that we need until Monday. Is that correct? Legal tells us by Monday at earliest. So if there are folks here waiting for 1028, we probably will not be able to hear that until Monday because of the amendment drafting that's necessary. So it will certainly be Monday on that bill. kind of folks waiting for that. Well, that's the situation. I've been asked by our legislative fiscal staff to go into a recess for our other bills. We are going to reorganize and regroup. We have other bills coming to the committee, so we'll be perhaps posting a different agenda, which adds a few bills. We have a one-hour rule in effect now. So what we're going to do is go into recess at the committee. I invite the committee members to be at their ease for the next 15 minutes. We'll reconvene at 5 minutes till the hour. Any questions, any comments? We are in recess. We have been in recess a little bit longer than the chair anticipated, but we're going to go ahead and work through a DEQ issue, and we'll we are in work session and on House Bill 5019. Mr. Rocco, would you give us a brief overview of the issues before us?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, I've passed out to you a memo dated July 10th that describes the situation with the Department of Environmental Quality Budget. This budget was passed out by the subcommittee on July 6th. Included in that decision of the subcommittee was the elimination of a position in the Environmental Partnership for Oregon Communities program and the addition of five positions in the community for the Community Solutions Team. And these five positions were funded with $89,000 general fund and a little more than $800,000 of federal TEA 21 funds that were going to be provided to the Department of Transportation. Since the subcommittee took action, the Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee decided to direct ODOT not to transfer TEA funds to DEQ, and that action was completed this morning, earlier this morning. Due to the lack of federal funds, we are now recommending that the EPOC position that was eliminated be restored to the agency's budget, and then eliminate Package 304, the Livability Initiative, in the Director Cross-Media Division of the agency. The net effect of this is to increase the previously approved budget by $94,221 general fund, reduce other funds by $804,051, and reduce the number of positions by a net of four. In light of this situation, LFO also recommends that a budget note be included to direct the department to try to find additional funding sources for this activity and come to the e-board for position authority and expenditure limitation if that funding can be found from another source.
Thank you, Mr. Rocco. Are there any questions on the presentation of the information from Mr. Rocco on House Bill 5019? The chairman is not happy with this motion or this proposed action. First of all, the Department of Environmental Quality is a key player in the community solutions effort, and the community solutions effort is tied to the economic development objectives of rural communities, and the community solutions component exists in, I think, three agency budgets, four agency budgets, and each one of those components is integral to the overall plan for developing better capacity in rural communities. So the net effect here is that we're taking T21 funds, which are usable for planning for transportation or planning for local government interface, including economic development issues, and instead of using them for the community solutions planning and implementation of economic development, we will be allowing those T21 dollars to go back to the Department of Transportation to be used for planning for transportation. And notwithstanding that we have plenty of planners in the Department of Transportation, we're going to get more money for planning there and less money for use in the Department of Environmental Quality, and specifically $0 in the Department of Environmental Quality to implement that livability component, which was to support the economic development issues in rural areas. notwithstanding that, we are going to take action on this as requested by the co-chairs and move this forward today. I'm not sure that it might not be reconsidered in some other configuration, but we've been asked to take this action, and that's the chair's intention to do. Representative Mitchell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was concerned when we passed this bill out a days ago. As I said at that time, that the department, particularly a department the size of DEQ, should have had an interest in working with the local communities anyway with that type of funding. But I did support that bill. But I just wanted on the record that I think this is a charge, part of their responsibility to work with these communities. And when they have projects or programs that they're trying to move forward, that they help coordinate that and so that they can, and the communities can move forward in a timely manner. I would hope that they can absorb this within their budgets with their staff that they have at the local level and with policies that from the director's office that would direct those local staff to make some of those decisions. And I hope this does not vastly diminish from the program of the community solution teams.
Actually, you could call Mr. Marsh up and have that acknowledged for the record. This is a relatively small appropriation of funding, $89,000, but it is a 10-to-1 federal fund match. So it actually represents $890,000 that will not be available for community solutions activities through the Department of Environmental Quality, which was one of the four agencies that had a component in delivering a part of the livability agenda, which was specifically related to economic development in rural and distressed communities. Mr. Marsh, the Department of Environmental Quality does have a role to play in a community solutions effort, and I guess the question from Representative Mitchell is how will the department meet its objectives in community solutions and planning under these circumstances?
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Lane Marsh, the DEQ Director, Representative Mitchell Lee. First of all, I heartily agree with your characterization, Mr. Chair, of the importance of this kind of effort, particularly for rural communities, although it is a statewide effort. I guess I would emphasize, Representative Mitchell Lee, that this the philosophy of community solutions is one which I believe is increasingly important for us as we do our work. And the participation we've had so far in the community solutions team, and we believe in, that we are an integral part of that, has confirmed that this is an effective way of doing business in a number of communities. And I think I mentioned to you the Crusade example last time. I think what where we would like to see these additional positions do their work is to expand the opportunities, as the other members of the community solutions team are doing also, to be able to work with communities in more situations. And so it's not that we won't continue to do as much as we can within our resources, but we will not be able to keep up with those other agencies as we and they expected to, and look for other opportunities for this kind of collaborative problem solving.
Representative Mitchell, does that address your issue? Any other questions for Mr. Chairman? Senator Turner.
Actually, it sounds as though we were under a mandate to approve this. What happens if we don't necessarily act this way?
Senator Toronto, I think that gives each member of the committee an opportunity to take an hour off, if that's the situation.
Hour? Well,
everyone thinks to get somebody else in your book to still. But the issue is, I think we also have to understand and respect that it's a principal issue for the folks on the Transportation Committee, and the principle that they are defending is that T21 funds coming from the Federal Transportation Department are earmarked for road building, period. And so the use of them in planning for other activities violates the principle that we're trying to put more money in roads. I support that principle. You've supported the principle. I think all of us have discussed those issues in the past. So what we have here is a
a clash of principles when the Transportation Committee feels that the more emphasis we put on roads in federal and state funding from road funding sources, the better off we are. So I can't argue with the principle. I don't like the effect.
I think that the Community Solutions team is one of the finest things we do in the planning process. And I don't have any argument with the principles that the Transportation Committee has. But I also think that it's been real clear to this committee that DEQ has a lot of responsibilities. That I don't think that we can just look to them and say, well, suck it up, you know, from other areas. And that if we do have a circumstance where, you know, KC-12 is cannibalizing the state budget, and that there is, you know, understandable resistance to increasing the fees to cover the shortfalls. Nonetheless, you know, that's not DEQ's, you know, fault if that's not happening, and I think it's false economy not to have this, so I'm going to oppose not funding it from general funds.
Reference, I'll ask you to withhold your determination until we've heard the whole story.
What a good idea.
Thank you.
Just share my feelings with you.
I appreciate it.
Always sensitive to that.
Thank you. And it, we really are looking at a limitation change to the agency, but as a in point of fact, the agency will be increasing their actual appropriation because we're substituting another item. We're adding back an FTE, which is a larger amount for the agency. The limitation will go down, but appropriation will go up slightly. $89,000 is what comes out, and what goes back in is $101,500 and some odd dollars. And we'll let Mr. Rocker detail that. The other issue, of course, is that there are additional positions in three other agencies to accomplish the objectives of Community Solutions, so the program itself is not lost. The Community Solutions effort will go forward, and it will be distributed statewide as intended before. There will be fewer people available to do the work. The Department of Environmental Quality will still play a role in the Community Solutions issue. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With Senator Turnell and the other Representative King, I think I take strong exception to this particular move because I too see the Community Solutions team as one of the most important elements that we have out here working with the community. The other thing that I think it's important for us to bear in mind that I assume, and Ken can correct me if I'm wrong, but I assume it's a 10-to-1 match on the Department of Transportation too then on this $800,000. Is that correct? The match that we had to have, I assume, to whoever's budget this is going also is a match.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, I believe the money that comes into the Department of Transportation also requires an ask of some type. However, most of this money has been used for other agency activities, the transfer of the TDA funds for these kinds of planning activities outside of transportation planning.
If I understood that correctly, and Mr. Rocker can further correct me as I go along, if I'm wrong on it, but it does appear to me that in what we have done here by adding another position back into this budget, that we haven't increased it just by this amount, but we have increased it by some $200,000 overall in our whole budget picture in terms of the total dollars that are involved in it.
We'll have Mr. Rockwood detail that. Just in logistic terms, I'll need a motion to reconsider 5019, and then we'll have the LFO recommendations in the spreadsheet. Any other discussion on this topic?
Yes.
Just
a comment, a brief one. The Community Solutions team, and we talked about during the poster, of course, is a web that's contributed by different agencies to reach this. And so this is a critical part of that. And among those projects at the community level that we work on, often involved, as you know, transportation, so as part of the solution. So I'm not so sure that the principle is necessarily violated there. And I think this is a serious loss in doing an effective job on that.
So in order, Senator Nestor. Colleagues, we are going to want to move right to the Department of Fish and Wildlife budget, so I'm going to open the room for discussion, and I'm going to entertain some motions. First of all, to reconsider House Bill 5019.
So moved, Mr.
Chair. Representative Morgan moves reconsideration of House Bill 5019. Representative Westland.
You have to move to accept the bill back.
Motion to accept the bill has been made by Representative Morgan. Any questions on the motion?
She moved to reconsider the bill.
And your point again was?
The point is that you must move to accept the bill back into committee.
First,
of course.
Gotcha. I think we need to suspend the rule. So the motion is?
I will move that first.
First, we move to re-accept the bill into committee. Any questions on the motion? Any objections to the motion? Hearing none, so ordered.
Yeah, we'll remove to reconsider the bill.
Motion to reconsider the bill has been made. Any questions? Any objections? Hearing none, seeing none, so ordered. Colleagues, I'm going to ask Mr. Rocco to give us, in briefest terms, an overview of what the amendments will do to the DEQ budget and to the other elements of this.
Mr. Chair, the changes associated with this action will increase the previously approved general fund appropriation by $94,221. The reason for that is the position that was reduced earlier had a cost to the agency of about $180,000, which then was returned to support the general fund match required for the community solutions team. So there's an increase in the general fund by restoring that position, and then there's a net reduction of $804,051 in other funds, and this represents the loss of the CEA money that will not be transferred to the department.
Questions? Colleagues, I'm going to need a motion to amend House Bill 5019, accept the LFO recommendations, and move the dash one amendments. And I would like to do that in consideration of the request that we've had to reconsider this bill. And I'll take the unusual step of asking those that have objections to give the chairman a courtesy vote. I have not asked any member of this committee during this legislative session for a courtesy vote on any issues that appeared before us. But I would ask you to do that today, to register any objections that you might have or reservations that you might make about future votes on this bill. And also encourage you to express any opinions you might have about this change to the co-chairs, since I think they would value your input on the issue. But the chair does need a motion to amend House Bill 5019 with a dash one amendment. It's a conceptual amendment, but we're also made reflecting the July 10th issues and also as recapped by Legislative Fiscal Officer Ken Rocco. So we need the motion for the conceptual amendment. Mr. Russell Westman,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to amend House Bill 5019 as reflected in the dash one amendment dated 7-8-99, also to include the fiscal report as delivered by Ken Rocco as reflected in the July 10-99 LFO memorandum.
Any questions on the motion? Any objections to the motion? Hearing and seeing none. Senator Nestor. Then let us know for an objection from Senator Nestor. So ordered. We need a motion to move the dash one amendments into House Bill 5019. We did the conceptuals. Then we did both.
Yeah.
We did both. Okay. We need a motion to move House Bill 5019 to the full ways and means with a new pass recommendation. Representative Leffert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 5019 as amended to the full committee with a new pass recommendation.
We have a motion on the floor to move House Bill 5019 to the full ways and means with a new pass recommendation. Any objections to the motion? What objections? Objection from Senator Meffer.
I have a request for discussion.
Discussion. Representative.
Yeah. I appreciate your requesting the courtesy vote. I think you know what my feelings are on this. If my vote is necessary for a courtesy vote to have things proceed, because I understand that the votes will come, but it would take time to bring them here, I would do that. But I think you do have enough votes to pass that, so what I'll do is I'd appreciate the opportunity to pass on the vote, make sure you have enough for courtesy, and then be able to vote in my position. So.
Thank you, Representative. Representative,
just a comment, Mr. Chair, that I would hope that when this was carried to the full ways and means, that along with that would go the rural legislators' sentiments that you don't need transportation planning, you need community solutions teams.
Kristen Morgan, that is an excellent idea, and that's just the intention of the chair to carry for the full ways and means. You can rest assured that point will be made. It might be good to amplify that. In fact, those that feel strongly about this issue will attend the full ways and means hearing where this is presented. And that would be Sunday at 4 p.m., I believe.
Monday
probably. No, I could have Monday sometime. It should be scheduled. Senator Turner.
Mr. Chair, I'm willing to give you a courtesy vote, but I'm wondering if this committee couldn't send this in the poll without recommendation, as opposed to recommendation, because I don't particularly like what's happened with the Transportation Commission or the committee, certainly picking those funds.
Senator Tarno, the charge of the chairman is to move the bill forward. There was nothing discussed about whether it has a do not pass recommendation, a do pass recommendation, or no recommendation of the motion we have under considerations with a do pass. Representative Westland.
The procedure here is that we have to vote on a motion on the floor and on the table, and if that happens to go down, I would be happy to make another motion to send House Bill 5019 as amended to the full committee without recommendation.
A motion to amend is always in order, Representative Westland, so if somebody wanted to make a motion to amend, we could amend your motion. Actually, a motion to amend is always in order. So if I wanted to amend your motion, that would be the vote to amend. And then we would vote on the motion.
Well, I will defer to the chair's surety of parliamentarian knowledge. And I would, if I may, Mr. Chair?
Representative Westland is recognized.
I would like to amend my motion to send House Bill 5019 as amended to the full committee without recommendation.
Discussion on the motion? Hearing and seeing none, objections to the motion?
For the amendment?
This is for the amendment. Hearing and seeing none, the amendment is adopted. And we have a motion on the floor. Representative Jensen?
Yes, for the record, I will give courtesy vote to vote this forward, whether it is needed. Not another thing, but with a strong statement, or wishing for a strong statement, that I am opposed to it, and that I think that the dollars would be better spent the other way, and that the Community Solutions Team and DEQ's participation in that are very important to rural Oregon, and since I am representing rural Oregon, they're over my district.
Noted for the record, Representative Jensen, Representative Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too will help you move this bill. I always find it interesting that when we see or we perceive we see these agencies doing something that we don't like, we love to stand on our soapbox and rail and throw rocks at them. And at the same time, when they actually end up doing something that most of us approve of, we don't say thank you loud enough.
in the case of the Department of Environmental Quality, they've been a very collaborative and supportive player in forming and participating in the community solutions team. And so I want to thank you for that, Mr. Marsh. And I will be a reluctant yes vote.
Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and call the roll on this, Mr. Rocco, if you will.
This is the motion to move
Council 1519 as amended to the full ways and means without recommendation.
Representative Wesson?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Wesson?
Aye.
Representative King?
Me.
Representative Morgan?
Aye.
Senator Carno?
Aye.
Senator Metzger?
Yes.
Chair Ferriero?
Aye.
Motion passes.
The bill will be carried in full ways and means by co-carriers, Ferriero and Metzger. And on the Senate floor by Ferrioli and on the House floor, I'll need a volunteer. And this is, again, for the DEQ budget. This is a bigger bill than the community solution system. That would be chaired by Russian Wilson. Department of Fish and Wildlife Bill, House Bill 5023. Let's go ahead and open the public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 5023. I think we have a silent sheet back in the back. We'll get that in a moment. But Mr. Rocco, let's have the overview.
Mr. Chair, I've passed out a packet of information to the subcommittee members, including a memo from LFO regarding the recommendations from the agency budget, a spreadsheet detailing those recommendations, a packet of a list of budget notes numbering somewhere in the low teens, and an additional budget note that was provided by a representative Simmons. It's also my understanding that we have posted for a work session, House Bill 2100, which is the Department of Fish and Wildlife Fee Bill, for a work session at 12:40 today, so to give 1 hour notice for that work session. And I believe it's the co-chair's intent that the amendments to that bill be discussed and that action on it be delayed until a later date. So with that, Mr. Chair, I can either go through the recommendations or you can take public testimony.
I think, Mr. Rocco, I'd like to have you go through the recommendations so that folks that are interested in offering public testimony can hear how those recommendations fall out of this budget. And then we also have information that Representative Simmons and Representative Beyer would like to address the committee. So we'll see and hear them in connection with the public testimony. And then there is a sign-up sheet for folks who wish to make public testimony. We'll invite that. We're going to ask folks to make their public testimony as close as possible since we have a potentially large agenda yet building in the section today. So let's go ahead and ask Mr. Rocco to go through his recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I have before you the a memo and the spreadsheet as we've been doing in many of these budgets that we've been addressing in subcommittee. The LFO recommendations are based on an assumption that the revenue from House Bill 2100-5 amendments will be available, and that is the basis for these recommendations. The -5 amendments basically do a couple of things, as the committee heard yesterday in the testimony by the agency. They roll back the restoration enhancement surcharge, and they have some increases in selected fees. And when we get into discussion of that bill, it'll be more clear what those changes are to the fee structure of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Based on the revenues, we have in the fish division on the first page of your of the memo, and the third page of the spreadsheet, there's a summary in the Department of Fish and Wildlife due to the structure of the agency. There's a summary for the fish division, which is on the third page, and then it is broken down in subsequent pages into their major program areas. So the next page of the spreadsheet is the propagation program. The sheet after that is the natural production program. The next sheet is marine resources. And the next is interjurisdictional fisheries. Those four sheets combined will sum up to the fish division summary sheet. And when we get to the wildlife division, the same holds true with the wildlife division. As we've done in other budgets, we've been looking for efficiency reductions, and they are identified in the recommendations of where those are being found in this agency. There's several occasions of reductions in attorney general expenditures due to the rate increase, hourly rate change. And what are we reading from that? I haven't studied yet, but starting on the fish division, page one of the memo, there's a reduction, recommended reduction for attorney general expenditures of approximately $7,000 other funds. There's a 4% efficiency reduction identified in the propagation. This is for the propagation program now. 4% efficiency reduction in miscellaneous services and supplies of approximately $113,000 general fund.
That's a fish food, yeah, Mr. King.
Could be a item C is relating to package 200. With the revenues that would be generated from the fee increase, the recommendation would be to restore a portion of package 200. The total package was $755,000 other funds, and this proposal would restore about $470,000 or so. The inclusion in the restoration would be the hatchery production at Coal River, Willamette, and the steelhead at Fall Creek, and due to the continuing revenue shortfall, even with the fee increase, there would still be a need to eliminate the trout production at Fall Creek.
Sure. Representative,
will that production be picked up by contractors? Mr. Chair, you may want to ask the department.
Actually, I would like to call the director. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thank you, Director of Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Did I mention the debt collection about Trout Creek or Fall Creek account for next
week? I'm sorry, could you restate that?
Just ask if you're dropping off the trout production from your Fall Creek hatchery, will that production be picked up by contracting?
Mr. Chair, Representative Newsley, I believe that would be under the original agreement of that bill where we had a movement out of our propagation program into natural production. This would be an additional cut, I believe, to that, and I want to turn to my staff and just make sure that we're on the same page.
That's incorrect.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Douglas DeHart, Director of Fish Division of the
Morning, Department. Mr. DeHart. Thanks for being here.
Trout budget would be reduced by the nearly $300,000 here, so that trout production would be lost. Under the bill which the governor has now signed that directs us to fund 10% of our trout production by purchases from outside of the department, We will have to identify 10% of our budget that's presently spent at other facilities that will be funded, and make those reductions as well in order to make those purchases. So this amount of trout production will be lost. The outside purchases will keep the total number of trout in our other programs at a constant level, but will require the downsizing or closing of other trout facilities as well.
Hello, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up question, Mr.
Have you analyzed what this will do to your fishing opportunities and to ultimately to the license sales?
Mr. Chair, Representative Meserly, this would have been new increased trout production, so if not funding it does not result in a reduction in present opportunities, our hope and intent, though, had been to provide new trout fishing opportunities in western Oregon, especially to compensate for some reductions in salmon fishing opportunities, and so encourage license sales. That opportunity will be lost, but we don't have an estimate of the actual effect on license sales, no.
Thank you. Any further?
Mr. Chair, then item D, we're recommending a reduction of $500,000 general fund to establish a special purpose appropriation and emergency fund, primarily to in relation to a couple of budget notes in the that are being proposed to direct the agency to make progress in implementing House Bill 3609 and to discuss other hatchery-related issues with the emergency board. And those funds will be available to the department upon a report on those activities related to hatchery issues. And then natural production program, which is the next sheet of your spreadsheet, and starts with item E on page 1 of the memo. We're recommending a general fund reduction for Oregon plan positions of approximately $2.5 million and basically a fund shift between general fund and the Measure 66 lottery funds. And these are the Oregon plan positions that were approved by the subcommittee in Senate Bill 5539 for Oregon plan positions within the base of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. There's a 4% efficiency reduction identified that eliminates one position with in the natural production division that's used to develop propagation protocols and other activities related to hatcheries. Elimination of this position would mean that that individual's work would need to be absorbed by remaining staff in the program. The net cost of that is $150,000. Item G is a recommendation to approve Package 201. This adds positions for coordination activities with landowners and other technical services, and also and so there's approximately $300,000 from the fee revenue from the fee proposal, and also included are 21 limited duration federally funded positions that the agency wishes to continue on a limited duration basis. Item H is Package 202. We're recommending elimination of the other funds portion of that package due to insufficient fee revenues, but approving the federal funds portion and one position that is federally funded. And that's a reduction of about $252,000 of other funds. Item I is relating to Package 203. Our recommendation is to approve the Diamond Lake portion of this package, which requires $400,000 from the fee proposal to be used to match $1.6 million of federal money in order to treat the Diamond Lake area and get rid of an invasive species in that lake.
This would also eliminate one position, however, due to the insufficiency revenues and result in a reduction in the total package of $540,000 other funds. Item J is a elimination of package 207. This was proposed to have been funded with another $66 lottery fund. It includes several components for predation and research studies. We're recommending elimination of this $1 million package due to the insufficient dollars in the negative 66 lottery fund on the operating side, but suggests that these activities could be funded ultimately out of the restoration and protection research fund that was established in House Bill 3225. K is a recommendation to approve package 208. This is another package that was funded in Senate Bill 5549 by the subcommittee earlier this week, using Measure 66 lottery funds to continue the steelhead supplement positions that were approved by the emergency board on a limited duration basis. This continues those as permanent. Item L is a recommendation to reduce the base budget by $150,000 general fund and establish a special purpose appropriation in the E-Fund and direct the department to request these funds after reporting to the emergency board on progress and its occurring and implementing work and plan activities by the agency. On the next sheet of the spreadsheet is the marine resources, and with beginning with item M on the page 2 of the memo, there's a 4% efficiency reduction identified at $20,000 for miscellaneous services and supplies. Item M is elimination of package 204, which is a general fund package requesting at sea and dockside fishery services in the commercial fishing sector. The reason for this is the lack of general fund available under the leadership budget plan. And that results in a reduction of $528,000 general fund. On the next spreadsheet is the interjurisdictional fishery area.
Back, Mr. Ackles.
What is included in at sea and dockside fishery services?
Chair, Representative Messerly, this was the proposal to increase both port sampling and at-sea sampling in the ground fish fishery, including chartering with existing fishing boats and operators to gather scientific information on the status of ground fish stocks to better manage harvest and population levels of those species. It was the state contribution to a state and federal program to improve ground fish information.
So this package is a elimination of the enhancement over the current service level, or is this a reduction in the program?
Chair Representative Messerly, this would have been an enhancement above current service level.
What is the current service level?
The current service level for the entire marine program is approximately $7 million. The amount of money that we are putting into at-sea sampling work at this point by charter and by our own efforts is about $300,000.
Representative King?
Now finding package 204 in the workbook.
Next to the last
slide. Okay. 2001 governor's recommended budget. I'm not finding that package in here.
Chair, Representative King, it's on page 202.
Sure, could I do another follow-up?
$7
million in marine resources. What is the other 6.7 million?
Mr. Chair, Representative Messerly, the marine program is divided into three basic components. A component to protect marine habitats, including gathering information and developing recommendations on activities such as proposed seafloor mining, laying of communications cables, other activities that change the seafloor, gathering information on both salmonid and non-salmonid fish species at docks and at sea, and an analytical component that does development of population sizes, estimates of allowable catch rates, and then works for the Pacific Fishery Management Council to present and explain those recommendations. Those have been the three base portions of the marine program for some time, though those areas have undergone reductions in the last two bienniums of nearly $1 million a biennium.
If I could follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So that is what the $6.7 million goes to. What is the $300,000 go to?
Those are the funds that we've actually used in the last biennium, which were appropriated to us by the Emergency Board to develop new at-sea sampling programs and to contract with fishermen for sampling, which is an area we had not had any funding in the past to carry out. We would operate our own vessels that are capable of at-sea sampling. So our only choice other than a very large expenditure to purchase a large vessel is contracting with local fishermen, and generally speaking, they are very willing to work with us.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we have time today to get deeply into this budget note, but I assume that you have the authority to that mix, and I don't care how you get the information. What I am concerned about is the lack of information we have on the ocean and the impact that has on our fisheries. I guess I'm just very hopeful that if we're not able to enhance those funds, that we can prioritize where we can get the best information and the most information most efficiently. I've been frustrated ever since I've been in this body of the lack of information we have in the ocean, at least the lack of information that we can apply to our decisions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I need a point of clarification here. You talk about $7 million. Is that state appropriated money or is that federal money? Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, that's the total budget of our marine program. Of that $7 million, approximately $3 million is license and poundage fee dollars. About $3 million is federal money, and about $1 million are state general fund dollars.
And I concur with Representative Messerly. I don't know if we're not being penny wise and pound foolish in relationship to this. At least if I understand correctly, there's been considerable discussion about the decline in some of these fisheries and the revenue or the activity, the economic activity along the coast is suffering from that. I certainly think we need the information to be able to know where we're going for this. Sure. Another question in mind. Do you do this research and this data collection within the department, or do you contract it to other
establishments, universities, and other residents here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mitchell, this program is carried out primarily by the department staff and by contracting for sampling with as I mentioned, local commercial fishermen. We have some small contracts for some analytical work with the Marine Science Center of Oregon State University, but we do not contract out a large portion of this work now.
Could you explain why you don't?
Mr. Chair, Representative Metterly, work that we carry out involving analysis and involving development of recommendations can be accomplished less expensively by department staff than by bringing in outside consultants. The area of field sampling itself, however, as I mentioned, we've made effective use of contracting with individual fishermen, and to the degree sampling money is available to us, we'll continue to make that our first priority because that area is very cost effective.
Mr. Chair, again, I don't wish to prolong this process, but I would like to see a report as to how you analyze that in your cost analysis. And I'd like to see a report back to our annual committee, whoever serves on that. But I would personally like to see that myself.
Representative King. I don't have enough time to answer my question, but the OSU Marine Science Center has been a great school there for a long time. And I kind of wonder why they're not doing studies, you know, in this area that would be valuable to the state of Oregon, you know, sometime over the last 30 years, you know, and most particularly currently that would be of use to you that, you know, under the natural pilot process. And I do wonder, why aren't they studying or what are they studying? And I don't think that the answer is like this second, but it'd be nice to know that at some point.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, I can't very well speak for OSU, but I can partially answer your question, I believe, having worked very closely with the Marine Science Center, and that is to say that, of course, the university doesn't have a budget themselves for this kind of work. They very much rely on contract federal dollars. Federal government, the National Marine Fisheries Service, has put very little money into information collection in this area, though I think now, with the sudden decline in groundfish stock, they are seeking federal money, and that situation may change.
Well, if I could just do a quick follow-up, that, their research vessel is, you know, signed up, I'm sure, years in advance, and, you know, clearly that resource isn't available to us. But then if anything's all over the ocean, you know, makes me wonder then, well, why aren't they, you know, studying something closer to home when we clearly do need that information?
Well,
Representative Jensen.
Thank you. Representative?
Mr. Chair, heavy on that.
Mr. Chair? Thank you. The issue of not money federal dollars coming in here is that an issue? The concern I guess I have is whether that's an issue of the federal dollars haven't been basically available or that there hasn't been an active pursuit of federal dollars for this type of activity. And I would like to see more of an active pursuit of federal dollars for this type of activity.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, the primary reason has been that the federal government has dedicated very little money to collection of groundfish information in the past. As I say, I expect this to change in the near future, and we will certainly take the committee's direction and very actively seek a share of those funds.
Now we're on a little bit of a short timeline here. Let's let staff finish their report and set the questions if you could.
Mr. Chair, to continue on interjurisdictional fisheries, there's an item O on page 2. There's a 4% efficiency reduction identified of $15,000 general fund. Recommending approval of package 206 with the additional fee revenue generated from the fee proposal and approval of the federal funds for
resource management, federal funds of approximately $655,000. There are two technical adjustments that we would like to recommend that are not included in your memo, and these are both additional federal funds that the agency has been able to obtain. There are five positions that would be five limited duration positions that would be funded at $332,847 of federal funds. The revenue is from the Bountiful Power Administration, and they're part of habitat projects on Trout Creek, 15 Mile Creek, and as part of the Trout Restoration Program. And this would be in the Natural Production Division. There's also a technical adjustment for a limited duration position in the Marine Program that is funded by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And this would be a port fish age reader in the Nearshore and Developmental Fisheries Program, and that is approximately $82,400 of federal funds for that limited duration position. And those are, they don't, I'm sorry, they don't appear anywhere in your spreadsheet or in your memo. Wildlife Division is number two on page two, and the next set of pages in the spreadsheet. Again, there are programs within the Wildlife Division, the Game Program, Habitat Program, Diversity Program, and those three, again, add up to the Wildlife Division summary page. In the Game Division, there are two recommended changes, reduction of the Attorney General fees due to the hourly rate change, which is $5,300 of other funds limitation reduction, and we're recommending in package 100, elimination of the other funds component of that and three positions, and this is due to insufficient revenues from the fee increase, but we're recommending approval of the federal funds and one limited duration position under package 100. In the Habitat Division, there is one recommended change, and that is in package 101, we're recommending a reduction of about $530,000 other funds in that package, again due to the amount of revenue that the fee increase would generate, and this would reduce the four of the six positions included in that package. There is also federal funds in that package that we're recommending approval of that support two of the positions. And finally, in the diversity program, the only change we're recommending is an efficiency reduction and from miscellaneous estimates to cost of $39,000 general fund. Mr. Chairman, can I figure out what part of package 101 is being reduced? I'm looking in the budget narrative, you know, in the government budget. I had a hard time finding package 101. I found the spreadsheet in the government budget for 101 on page 123, but I'm not finding in the narrative so I can identify what piece that cut is.
Mr. Chair. Jim Greer for the record. I believe what we are showing there are the four FT that are currently operating our deer and green forage program. Those would be the positions that would be cut, and the remainder would be S&S left in the program, and that would allow continued program activities that would have to be completed by existing positions, such as district wildlife biologists.
Is that helpful?
Again, let's hold our questions because we're in a short time. We've got another committee that starts at 1 o'clock. I want 5 minutes to eat lunch, and I want staff to get through the entire report.
And Mr. Chair, the Habitat Division is the next page of your spreadsheet, and it's item number 3 in the memo. In this division, we're recommending an efficiency reduction of miscellaneous estimates of $50,000 general fund. And again, there are some technical changes to this division. We're recommending increase, and these again are not appearing anywhere on your spreadsheet or material. A position of one position and $95,000 of federal funds expenditure limitations for a litigation position in the that is funded by a DTA contract. We're recommending an adjustment of $92,000 for additional hydroelectric contract revenue. And a technical adjustment to add $400,000 of other funds limitation for natural resource damage assessment for emergency response of the agency to damage complaints that occurred during the biennium. The state police budget on the next page, page 3 of the memo, and spreadsheet, next page of the spreadsheet. We're recommending several changes here. Elimination of package 350, which requested Measure 66 lottery funds and other funds from the fee increase. These are being removed because the state police was funded directly in Senate Bill 5549. Instead of having the dollars, the Measure 66 dollars go to the Department of Fish and Wildlife first. There's a technical adjustment to reduce the inflationary increase in package 030 from there's two different inflationary rates that are used, and the incorrect rate was used on this package. So that results in a reduction of $107,000 other funds limitation. And then there's a base deduction to reduce the transfer to the state police to match available revenues of $1.9 million. And none of these changes affect the state police level of staff that they'll be able to have. These are technical changes to accommodate what has occurred in the state police budget and in Senate Bill 5549. On the administration, there is a reduction of $1,217 general fund for reduced attorney general costs, a 4% efficiency reduction taken from licensing activities of $50,000 general fund. We're recommending elimination of the general fund in package 401. This is a request to get general fund to pay for state government service charges. We're recommending elimination of that. And reduction of the other funds proposal by $353,000 to match available revenues. And the bulk of the remaining other funds in that category are used in the point-of-sale licensing system, which revenue will be incorporated in the agency increase in the fee bill. We're recommending inclusion of a budget note to direct the department to report to the emergency board on the feasibility of selling surplus property. Earlier in hearings, the department identified some surplus property holdings that they have, and this would direct them to report to the emergency board on the availability of revenues from those sales and an estimate of how much they could achieve through selling that property.
Recognize Chris Van Mitchell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this will start with the chair. I would much prefer to see a timeline put on that, and I would suggest that by December 31st of this year, to have a report to the e-board, and that they could come back to the e-board in future years to request expenditure of those funds that are generated from the sale.
I think you made a leap of logic there, Mr. Mitchell. They would make a report by the December 31st of this year on the revenue that could be generated on the properties that could be surplus and sold. And there would have to be a decision to sell before they ended up authorizing expenditure of the revenue. So. But essentially, wasn't a bad assumption. There's some, I think, that could be sold. Rusty Morgan?
I would like to see this budget not further tightened up to actually require them to come forward with a plan to sell surplus property with and the plan to include estimated revenue to be generated, an estimation of the time required to market the property, and a determination of the use of the sale or the proceeds of the sale.
Further questions?
And I understand the logic of that, but I would also not want to exclude the possible consideration of land exchanges. Because I know there are places where they need to acquire some land, but, there's problems, and this is a resource to be able to fix that also.
I guess then also, Mr. Rock, I'll let disposition of property be a recommendation, whether or not disposition means sale, retention, or exchange. And if retained, I guess the further question would be what purpose, what wildlife or fisheries management purpose is being served by the retention of the property? Question on St. George.
Mr. Chairman, this is a case of not being here and not knowing if this question's been either dealt with or solved. But we had in our committee a testimony involving mountain goose depredation, the idea that we were not going to be able to afford to plant some of the feed sources, to keep the ducks and geese there. Did you have the idea that if we're not going to do that, that should be transferred back into agricultural purposes, because that's some premium farmland and some of that could in fact be generating revenue from another source, either rental or...
At this point, Senator George, feeding in steel shot is the preferred method of feeding geese, predating crops in the Willamette Valley. We've got more than enough to go around.
I was more interested in whether that property might have a value if it wasn't going to produce feed.
That's my point. We don't need to attract any more geese to go around the valley. In fact, we ought to do something to get rid of it.
The purpose of my bringing this forward early on was threefold: to get land back on the county tax rolls, to get land back into production, and also to generate revenue for the department.
I don't believe we did talk about that, but Mr. Rockford, did we address the issue of goose predation at this point? Or to this point that we talked about?
Mr. Chair, I believe there's a budget analysis addresses
we'll get
studies
to it.
And take care of some problems with goose damage. Another technical adjustment that's not included in your materials is a recommendation to increase the limitation, other funds limitation in this administrative unit by $1.9 million to reflect the earlier reduction that was taken in the state police, since that money was going to be transferred to state police and instead would be available for the agency's use to pay the state government service charges that they are required to pay under the Department of Administrative Services. And there's only a couple items left. The non-limited, we're recommending approval of the governor's recommended budget. This is payment through the point of sale licensing system and debt service on the CFPs that were previously issued. There's no new CFPs. Capital improvement, we're recommending a 4% efficiency reduction of $18,130 general fund, and a reduction of limitation of $3.1 million, which represents the amount of revenue that would be, affected by the rollback of the Harney surcharge that was increased in the last legislative session. And those that $3.1 million is distributed amongst some of these other packages that we've already discussed. And finally, in the capital construction budget, we're recommending approval of the governor's recommended level in capital construction, which is $8.4 million of federal funds for several street projects. And finally, there are some changes that we would recommend House Bill 5023, which would be to add the appropriate Measure 66 lottery fund implementation language to replace Section 3 of the bill, and a technical change in Section 2 to exclude federal funds from Section 2 instead of including them.
Mr. Rocco, have we received anything from the department regarding the federal funds, both from the ocean for the mineral and also from the ocean and recreation? $7 million in each of those categories.
I believe the director prepared the answer to those questions.
I just wanted to reference Mitch's question. I think what you're referring to is are those federal dollars that are in the pending bill right now in Congress relative to what was formerly called human with wildlife money. These are offshore oil and gas lease dollars that any bill would come back to the states, very similar to the Pittman-Robertson and Dingell Johnson funds, which are funds that come back to the agency on excise tax for sporting arms and ammunition. So that process is set up to simply bring federal dollars to the state through that same process where we focus it at our non-game species, where we currently have very few dollars to maintain our programs or even move into programs and determine status of non-game species around the state. That bill is probably going to be heard next month, and that's all we really know for sure at this stage of the game. Depending on which markup in the House or Senate, it could generate anywhere from $7 to $12 million of federal funds for the state of Oregon, which would have to be matched on a 3-to-1 ratio, very similar to those other federal programs.
Well, haven't we also had another federal program in this present, the past biennium?
Mr. Chairman,
and how did you spend those funds?
Yeah, I think the question was really more specific to how are we spending those current sport fishing restoration funds that we do get off the excise tax. And if you'd like to have a quick update on that, I can have Doug DeHart give a brief overview of that.
Yeah, go ahead.
The intention of the chair is to have Mr. Rocco go through the changes in the budget notes since yesterday, which would take just a few minutes, and then offer the public testimony opportunity to the three witnesses that we find. Well, Mr. Rocco finds out if we're going to move this bill now or wait for the feedback. So, in any case, you have to be out of here by 5 to 1.
I prefer to defer so much, but I would like to have that report.
Okay, and so the report's requested. Thank you for the deferral, colleagues. We do need to be clear the room for another hearing that would begin at 1. So, by 5-2, we're going to be done with what we're going to do. So. Mr. Rocco, do you have an update on changes to the budget note?
Mr. Chair, yesterday I passed out a budget memo, and today I provide you with an update on it. That there's been several additions to it, and there's a total of 11 now. The first one is regarding House Bill 3609 and the state's wild fish policy. There was a suggestion to add some information regarding the Coastal Salmon Restoration Production Task Force involvement in reviewing artificial propagation, and that's included in the second paragraph of the first budget note. The second budget note is direct the department to report to the e-board on the establishment of a process to implement the fish screening program. This was set aside district subcommittee included in Senate Bill 5549. There's a budget number 3 is discussing the damage caused by geese, which was included in the Department of Fish and Wildlife budget. It was recommended to be included in the Fish and Wildlife budget and was also included in the Department of Ag budget, the same budget note. The fourth budget note is regarding the landowner assistance programs such as deer enhancement and the green forage program and coyote and predator control. The fifth budget note regards new cervid holding permits. Sixth budget note is discussing developing additional fishing opportunities in the Upper San Juan River region. Budget note number 7 directs the department to develop a comprehensive policy on predation. Ensure federal reimbursement for all costs associated with capture and return of Idaho wolves. Number eight is regarding a controlled hunt application process that to ensure that residents have more time to plan and are notified sooner regarding the success of their application. Budget note nine is directing the directing the R&E board and department to find additional fishing opportunities. Budget note 10 is regarding that if any resources can be identified for commercial fish research, that the department reports to the emergency board on how they plan to use these funds. And the 11th budget note is directs the department to request position authority for up to 10 habitat biologists to assist forest landowners and watershed groups. And it's our understanding that the former governor's watershed enhancement board has set aside funding for this and is waiting to get confirmation that the department would be able to hire those 10 biologists. In addition to that, there is a budget note that was provided by Representative Simmons regarding cougar and bear issues on deer and elk fish.
Questions on the presentation of AFL recommendations or budget notes?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, back in the fish division section, item 10, Human Resources Eliminate Package 204, I think partially along the same lines Representative Messerly was questioning. That would eliminate, Doug, the ground fish study that was funded last session.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westland, no, we would be able to continue those small cooperative programs that we began. We had hoped to expand those substantially with this package in the next biennium. The expansion wouldn't happen.
So we will still have a current service level budget for the ground fish study.
For this sampling work, yes. The current service level budget will actually require some other adjustments for inflation in the marine program, but we'll maintain this small cooperative sampling effort.
And that's about how much dollar resource?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westland, just under $300,000 is the total for several cooperative activities, including the stable fish work and the work on miscellaneous blackfish that's taken in trawl fisheries.
So $300,000 would be available for
cooperative activities.
Ground fish study.
Yes.
And that's yes. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I do have a question about the docking of traps for additional fishing opportunities in the Upper Skagit region. The target water bodies appear to be ponds only, and I've had quite a bit of interest from the folks in that area about docking and fishable opportunities for river stock. Can you address that, Mr. Garrison?
Mr. Chair, yes. In this area of the Santa Ana system, the native steelhead has been listed as a federally threatened species. So we had modified our stocking practices here to eliminate the practice of stocking catchable trout on top of rearing juvenile federally protected steelhead in areas where this conflict does not exist. There is still some potential for stocking, but these aren't areas that have very good public access, and historically we've had very low returns on our stocking in those areas. So our strategies in this basin are looking primarily at ponds and other non-flowing waters.
Question? Mr. Hart, that's causing some real concern because of the relative fall off of recreational visitor days related to fishing in the spring. And obviously, we have to put the interest of the survival of that stock first, but there is certainly a great interest in seeing that there's balance between those objectives of recovery and the objective of recreational use of that water body. And I'm hearing in no uncertain terms from members in the body as well as members of the public that they would like to see a better balance and a little more recreational opportunity for fishing in that water body. I guess with the constraints of the ESA, that's going to be problematical for the agency. Is there any midpoint or balance point that we can look to restore fisheries opportunities or fishing, recreational fishing opportunities?
Mr. Chair, we can investigate some opportunities for stream systems in areas where the steelhead conflict does not exist and try to resolve access problems in those areas working with the Forest Service. But in the particular area that I believe you have heard concern and interest about adjacent to existing campgrounds, I don't believe there's a way to solve that conflict in those specific areas.
So you have heard the residences of the conflict, the discussions in your office as well.
Yes, sure.
We got to do something about that. I'm not sure what that is. Colleagues, we're going to go ahead and call up the folks that have offered public testimony, and then Mr. Rocker is going to do some research on our next series of steps, so we'll have a report for you about what our intentions are for the rest of the day. But I'd like to call Paul Hanneman. Here in about 7 minutes. We'll bring you your lunch.
Well, 2 minutes ago you said you'd be done with
it. Yeah, I did. But you'd be one person in the whole building who believes anything I said today. That's too violent.
I am very proud
of that. Gentlemen, you've heard Westland speak eloquently about the time constraint, so I'm going to ask you to constrain your remarks and focus them.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, for the record, Paul Hanneman, representing the Seafood Processors and the Oregon Fall Commission. You've heard our presentation during the public testimony before. Representatives Westland, Jensen, and Meserly ask interesting questions of the department, very direct ones this afternoon. And there were two answers that I think need to be put into context, members of the committee. Both of Mr. DeHart's answers to the questions were true, but they need to be put into context. And one question was, is package 204 an enhancement? And the answer was yes. The second comment, though, that followed that was, well, in the last two biennia, we slipped about $1 million per biennium. And if my notes are correct, that's what Mr. DeHart said, and I believe that's true. When you take package 204 with its $528,000, that has to be put into context with the $2 million we've lost in the last 4 years in the program. And it's not the industry's fault necessarily, but it's our revenues that are not contributing to the level that they used to be before we had the heavy restrictions from the federal level. To opt on the safe side, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has presented to the Federal Council, to the Pacific Council, conservative estimates based on a model that wasn't very good. Both the industry and the environmental preservation community believe that the only answer, no matter which way it slices against either one of us, the only answer has to be better data. We can't operate on models like we submitted to the council last March. and the year before. And so our revenue is mainly responsible for that $1 million in loss. And I thank most of you many times that sat on the emergency board for helping us out a year ago February with the cooperative program with Oregon State University, a key grant. That money went to a different budget, and the money that went to the department. But we're slipping badly, and in terms of our facility and the bathroom, that's appropriate to where our industry's going. But in my memo to you this morning, I indicated that we contributed $23,560,000 in value of our product last year, 1998, and that's true, and that's all taxable wealth. And without that data, the state of Oregon and its collections is actually going backward. And so I appreciate the difficult situation with your general fund problem, and I don't blame Mr. Rocco for denying the request based on no general fund for this subcommittee. That's unfortunate, and I don't have any answers for you. This is probably the first time since I left here that I wish I was on your side of the table. I feel pretty helpless here, but we're not in good shape. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Byron, do you wish to add to the public record?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Steve Byron, the Oregon Guides and Packers, Curry Guides Association. I'm also the chair of the fish cleaning task force, and I want to thank you for the fish cleaning portion. That it is a very nice addition that allows us to do our 10-year program. One of the things that I see in the budget that I worked on early on, as things kind of fall out, is under propagation. The propagation, I would like to see natural fish production in hatcheries, where instead of putting fish in concrete ponds and feeding them from the top and doing things the way we've done, at least some example projects where we have log cover maybe in the pond and above the pond, gravel on the bottom, try to raise these fish to be smarter than what they are when we release them. And then we can measure the returns on those fish to see if we're getting the biggest bang for our dollar. The Corps engineers and talks I've had with them are more than willing to coordinate with the department at the Coal River Hatchery to do this and share some of the costs. And I would like to make that idea known, that maybe the department could work that way and work with the Corps engineers on that natural production. And I'm sure some of the members have seen some done in British Columbia and other places, and they get a much higher return. Because of the short time, I'll let it go there.
Thanks, Mr. Brown. While we prepare for a testimony from Mr. Donovan, I'd like to call forward Representative Byer and Representative Thompson if they wanted to add to the public record. We have been advised that the committee will not take action today, that this hearing will be continued Monday. We'll have a new posting for a public hearing and a possible work session on House Bill 2100, which is the fee bill, which gives all of us another couple of days to work through the processes and come to a better understanding with other members of what could be done here. So we will not be taking action on this budget today. We will be continuing this hearing on Monday. We will be having and posting a public hearing and work session for House Bill 2100 Monday. And this committee will be released at 1 o'clock, and the subsequent committee has been rescheduled for 1:30. So we have a half hour for staff to restock, reload, lock, load, and fire on the transportation hearing. That's Mr. Chairman. Public safety will be needed at 1:30. Then we will schedule you gentlemen for a push up on the public hearing on Monday.
Thank you, sir. And I'll take 2 minutes. Phil Donovan with the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association. Referencing page 3 of the Legislative Fiscal Office Recommendation Memo under Administration C, it's a reference to a point of sale and a potential increase on their license agency. I wanted to speak in support to that notion. I had a conversation with Debbie Glover of Fisherman's Marine and Supply that I'd just like to share with you a couple of points that she made. And she said, frankly, better, more efficient software systems and actual computers are essential and will help customers have a better experience in getting their licenses. And they also felt it was extremely important to have knowledgeable staff with accurate information at their disposal. And that's what this is helped Kane to do. Just to put it in context, if you really want to see public confidence in the Department of Fish and Wildlife wane, allow six fishermen to stand in line waiting to get their licenses while they're trying to get their licenses printed out. You can imagine the scuttlebutt that would take place there. So with that, I'd just like to close, and we'll be back here on Monday to maybe speak to some more speakers. Thank you.
Thank you. And Stream, do you want to testify today or Monday? Okay. We'll defer that opportunity and offer it again on Monday. Colleagues, we're going to go ahead and release the committee. Is there any other person here present that will not be able to add to the record Monday if they so desire to resist the issue? If not, we're going to close the public hearing. We're going to, close the work session. And we're also going to close the session and release the committee. Mr. Rock, do you have any concluding on that?
No, Mr. Chair, I think we'll schedule the budget bill again for Monday, and the fee bill, 2100 and 5023 will both be scheduled for Monday night.
Colleagues, thank you for the Saturday session and for your courtesy votes that you needed to get a bill out today. Appreciate it very much. We're here.
Take your ass and go.